So we come to the fourth of the clear comprehensions. And this is clear comprehension or clear recognition of non-delusion. And in calling it non-delusion, it's following a pattern in this early Buddhist teachings of describing the goal of practice as an absence, in this case, an absence of delusion. And sometimes people complain about how negative this early tradition is, so many non-this, non-that, non-clinging, not self. But one of the great values of describing the goal by what it's not is that there's less there to get attached to. If we say that the goal is, I guess the opposite of non-delusion might be wisdom. So if we say that the goal is wisdom or it's some kind of special knowledge, then you might hit the books, study up, get a PhD in Buddhist studies. You might go searching and searching for the key understanding, the thing that's going to do it. Imagine a person who was just learning English and they came and their orientation to life was always about getting things, having things, feeling only safe if there's something that makes them safe. So they're just learning English and they come into a difficult place that they have to get out of. And someone says, well, it's actually pretty easy to get out of this place. Just look for the opening. But they never heard the word opening before. So they go around looking for the thing, the solid, substantial thing, which is an opening. They look, and there's a big open door, but that's not a thing. So it can't be the way out to safety. They pick up the books, they pick up the, all kinds of objects. They're looking for an object. So if we say the goal is wisdom, then we're looking for what that is, that wisdom, and how can I have that wisdom and show it off? But if it's the absence of something, you unfortunately maybe don't have much to show for it. So, you go to your neighbor's block party and they ask you, what do you get from your retreat? And you say kind of happily, nothing. And they say, oh, they get kind of like, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Let me tell you what I got when I went on vacation or something. But in this case, clear comprehension of non-delusion is this amazing benefit, blessing of not being deluded. But clear comprehension of it is different than not being deluded. It's recognizing and valuing the absence of delusion. Knowing, I know what delusion is. I know I have been deluded through this brilliant practice of mindfulness. I've had my delusion smeared into my nose over and over again. I've seen it so many times. This is a little bit, mindfulness is a delusion magnet. So we get to see all the little delusions we operate under. And so hopefully And that's a kind of wisdom, to see it, to know it, and to clearly recognize something as delusion sets us up for recognizing its absence and appreciating that absence. Wow, it's gone. And so it is kind of a bad news to sit and practice this kind of practice and run into yourself sometimes, for a few of you, occasionally, maybe. You know, self-knowledge is not always good news. But it is good news. It's part of the path. It's part of understanding, clear comprehension of your delusion, of your misunderstanding, of your attachments, your clinging, is actually needed for this path. And there's no wonderful bypass around it. There's no shortcut, really. We kind of want to have, many people, you know, would like to have a very efficient spiritual path. Really efficient. You know, and if someone promises the most efficient path to awakening, maybe you'd even pay a lot of money for it. You know, that must be it. But not a few people have done something like that, or even had some kind of impressive experience of something on the short route, but they didn't know themselves. And because they didn't know themselves, then later they got into big trouble. They didn't understand their own delusion. And then with whatever wonderful qualities they had from their meditation, they were still deluded. So the inefficient path to awakening is the wise one, is the good one. Take the time so you really understand yourself. Get concentrated, not to get concentrated. Get concentrated so you have a vantage point to see how delusion and how your mind operates, the tricks of the mind, the hindrances. Develop clarity of mindfulness so that you don't rest in some blissful state of clarity, but so the clarity helps you see what obscures that clarity, what gets in the way of it. And in this way, you're slowly building the wisdom. You're slowly understanding. And then you're setting yourself up for a clear appreciation of the absence of delusion. You'll recognize it in a clear, definitive way. So this absence. And also, I think of the goal of Buddhist practice as a kind of radical simplicity. And there also we have this idea that, you know, there's not much there to attain, to get, to have, to show off with. But this radical simplicity, and particularly a radical simplicity of mind, a mind that's not racing and running, escaping, planning, fantasizing, caught in the vice of desire, caught in the fire of anger. Caught in the maze of analysis and figuring things out and trying to fix things. But rather, simplifying. Part of the value of clarity and mindfulness, stillness and concentration, is that there's less mental activity going on. We're calmer, which helps us to see when we get activated, to see when we start getting involved in mental activity. And this is helpful in terms of delusion and non-delusion, because delusion is always an activity of the mind. It always takes mental energy to be deluded. Your brain is generating an idea, a thought, a belief, which is not accurate. And that takes effort on the part of the mind. And so as the mind gets calmer, we start recognizing where that effort is. And it's possible to, at some point, to watch the arising of a thought and see that thought, oh, I don't think I believe that anymore. I used to believe it, but now I don't. And there's many kind of things that people pursue that later they realize was kind of a delusion. But even small things in daily life, it can be deluded. I don't know if this is a small thing or a big thing or what it is, but it's one of my delusions. So I sometimes write articles. And a very frequent delusion that I have is I'll finish this first draft and I say, oh, it's done. And I'll send it to an editor only to wake up the next morning and then somehow waking up, oh, I have more to write, or oh, I should change that, or I should do that. And so I've learned that I have this kind of drive, this kind of delusion and drive and to be finished and send it off and be done with it, that is really, I'm not really done with it. I do all these editors a disservice by sending it unfinished, the first draft. And so that delusion still arises in me when I finish the first draft. But I see it. Oh, there's my friend, my delusion. There's that thought, there's that impulse. Yep, there it is. Of course it's going to be there. This is Gil. So that's what Gil seems to do. So I just kind of shrug my shoulders and I don't send it. I wait now. But there's a doing, but my mind had the thought, oh, it's done. And I can watch the thought be born. And because I can watch it be born, arise, I can be wise about it. I can see it for what it is. If I'm living a busy, active mental life and all the stuff and running around doing many things, that impulse, just one impulse over many, and I might not even notice that I push send because I'm not so clearly comprehending what's going on. So to clearly comprehend, so we have these four clear comprehensions that belong to a contemplative life, a reflective life, a considered life. That is maybe sometimes not a message that's taught in the insight world because of the strong emphasis we have on mindfulness. And, you know, don't think, just be mindful. But there's definitely a time for reflection and thinking. And in terms of clear comprehension of purpose, sometimes we realize that in doing so, that some of the purposes we have been operating under were delusion. If only I become wealthy, then I'll be happy. If only this happens, if only this, that happens. In my early retreats, I had this, you know, a wonderful retreat thing. If only I can go on that retreat. That retreat so important. If only I can go on that retreat, then I'll be happy. And I got on the retreat, and I liked it kind of the first day. And I start thinking about, like, I got to go to the next retreat. And how am I going to manage to get to the next retreat? And I spend an enormous amount of time not being on the retreat I was on by thinking about going to the next retreat. So there's some delusion operating there. You know, it's kind of like rather humbling sometimes when we realize all these strange ideas that we come up with and live by. But the clear sense, you know, is we have these purposes which we realize after a while are not serving us. Maybe they served us when we were younger, but they don't serve us anymore. Clear comprehension of suitability. There can be a lot of delusion about what's suitable for doing this practice. Some people have all kinds of ideas of creative ways of doing mindfulness. Some of them maybe are good, but some of them are their shortcut approach. And I don't think it really works to have shortcuts, because you need to take the time to really get to know your mind and what goes on. What's suitable is to sit with yourself and get to know yourself. And getting to know yourself, it's suitable to see if you can become friends with yourself. So there's not the antagonism or criticism or diminishing the value of yourself, but to meet yourself with respect. That's suitable. And then maybe the idea is that you're anything less than beautiful is a delusion. I believe that if you really sit, you know, really settle deeply in the mindfulness practice, you will see that you're beautiful, that this is a beautiful world in there. It's hard to see when so many strong conditionings and life experiences and even people have told us differently. But to realize that inner beauty, we realize that any other message that we give ourselves is a kind of delusion. It's not suitable to be caught up in self-aggrandizement if you're trying to do this practice. It's not suitable to delusions of grandeur, how wonderful I'll be and the world savior if I attain this great practice, or at least the people on my block will think I'm pretty hot stuff. It's just not suitable because it goes in the wrong direction. If the purpose is to let go of clinging, the purpose is to end suffering, then we don't want to, then it's not suitable to practice with clinging, with a very kind of mindset that sets up the conditions for more suffering. I remember when I was sitting my Zen retreats, Sesshins, there was a custom of sitting up late at night. Custom, it was an optional obligation. They had really strange languages in Zen, but the optional required sitting. And so, you know, after the 9:30 sitting was over, then there was this optional late night sitting that was required. And then there was this competitive meditation that could, you know, was also kind of delusion. And so I'd be sitting there, you know, who's going to be the one who goes to bed late? And then you get to choose when you go to bed. So you have to sit there, but then it's your choice when you leave. So people are leaving at different times. And then there's the competition to see who can stay up the latest, the longest. And, you know, I succumbed to that, you know, sitting there. And then, like, there would be, like, me and one other person left. And my eyes would kind of dart over, and kind of, if you're sitting facing the wall with the eyes open, I kind of like know the person was over there, and I'd say, oh, that person's not really meditating. I don't know what that person is doing, but I can tell you, when I had those thoughts, I was not meditating. That was not meditation. That little resentful, what's that person sitting over there for? Go to bed. You shouldn't, you know, I'm the one who knows how to sit here. So it's all this delusion. That's not suitable for freedom. That's not suitable for letting go of clinging, that kind of approach. So eventually I became wise about it. I saw, oh, this is delusion. This is not appropriate. This is not helpful. And then clear comprehension about the domain, the pasture of practice is such an important one because of how people will pursue all kinds of other things is going to be the thing that solves their problems, gives them spiritual hope, something outside of them. And certainly can be relief and benefit from things from the outer world. But it can be a delusion to expect that some other person is going to fix me. They're going to have what it takes and I'll be fine ever after. Or that they'll come up with some new drug, a new psychedelic that will really do it. I'm of the generation that there was a lot of psychedelics. But then at some point, the wise ones decided that wasn't the way and decided to meditate instead. Anyway, this, you know, to really pasture, to really know, not be deluded about looking elsewhere, but right here in ourselves. So this the idea that this clear comprehension of non-delusion is the last of the four, I take it to mean that it's really kind of the builds on the other three. It's kind of what comes with practice matures, develops. We get quieter and stiller. When we come to a time when we actually can watch these ideas arise in our mind, and we have the, rather than being tricked by them, we see them for what they are. And one of the ones that the tradition puts a tremendous emphasis on is delusions around me, myself, and mine. Ideas that this is mine, this is who I am, this is my true self. In conventional terms, things are me, myself, and mine. In a, you know, it's a useful thing, a useful way of getting along in the world to some degree. But in terms of practice, to be caught up as we're doing this practice in too much self-concern, self-help, self correction, self, even self-healing, as important as that is, and we want people to be healed. There's something about the coagulation, the contraction around self, the preoccupation with self that we can have that is a kind of delusion. It interferes with, it's the drag, the anchor we're pulling behind us in the boat going down the river. It's heavy baggage we're carrying along on the path as we hike. A fascinating exercise to do, maybe after the retreat. Spend a day in your life. Maybe it's a two-day exercise. The first day, just count how many times you use the word I. As you speak, How often do you use the word I? Maybe you get a little clicker and just click away. And then the next day, try reducing the count by 90%. Try radically to say I less often. It's a little bit what happened to me when I lived in Japan, because in Japan, they have a word for I, but it's very rare in conversation you use it. But because there was such a word in Japanese, I would try to speak Japanese as I would speak English. So that I would start my sentences with this four-syllable way of saying I. We have one syllable, right? I. So easy. Innocent. But in Japan, I would start by saying watashi wa, which means something like, as for me. And it would sound like, maybe for the Japanese ear, it would sound a little bit like that. Imagine in English, someone, every time they were going to talk about themselves, they said to you, as for me. As for me. You know, you kind of, after a while, you know, the I thing seems innocent enough, but as for me. And so I had to learn. I had to see how much I-ing I was doing in my conversations in Japan. And I had to kind of learn to reduce it and be able to talk without using so much I. And I thought it was a really great exercise to do that. So it's a very, very hard subject, the subject of not being selfish, not being conceited, not being wrapped up around oneself and not in it. But at some point in the Dharma practice, we're not in it for ourselves. I actually think it's impossible to mature in this practice if you're only doing it for yourself, without some concern for others or some openness to something that's not self, non-self, care for the world. I don't think the motivation will be there to take this path as far as it can take you. And partly it is because this excessive self-concern and my practice, my attainment, what's in it for me, is orbiting around a kind of delusion, around a kind of clinging. That you can't cling your way to non-clinging. You can't delude yourself to the absence of delusion. So there's something about the constellation around how many of us get caught in self-concern. And some of it is quite reasonable, in a reasonable sense, but it still gets in the way. And a little bit is with our world, our insight meditation world, because we sit and close our eyes and kind of the focus is on these, you know, four foundations of mindfulness inside, it can actually reinforce sometimes the idea that it's about me, myself, and I. It's like all about me, what's here. But ideally, as we practice, we start seeing that I-ing, selfing is an activity of the mind. The mind has to, any thought you have, any feeling you have about this is me, this is who I am, is a kind of firing of neurons in the brain. It is a kind of activity of the mind. And to discover that you don't need to have that activity, that's not actually needed in certain circumstances to be free, to be happy, to be at ease, to be at peace. And that becomes a game changer. And then you have a kind of clear comprehension about non-delusion, clear comprehension about the value of not being caught up in self-preoccupation, self-measuring, proving oneself, defining oneself, making oneself into something. And we come back to this idea before of a radical simplicity. an absence of self-preoccupation, an absence of self-referencing, an absence of clinging to anything that could be called me, myself, and mine. Not as an abandonment or a non-caring for yourself, but actually as a deep caring and even love for yourself, because selfishness harms the person who's selfish. Conceit harms the person who's conceited. So as we sit and get clearer and clearer about this non-delusion, the wisdom of non-delusion and the wisdom of non-clinging are the same. And as we appreciate this possibility of non-clinging, we have this new vantage point that helps us to see how much we cling. We start seeing how much we are deluded. We start seeing how much selfishness gets in the way, limits us, and hurts us. So this letting go, becoming a radical simplicity, an absence that helps us to see clearly. So the clear comprehension of non-delusion helps us to see delusion. As we see delusion, we can step away from it into that place where there's non-delusion, because we know what non-delusion is like. Clear comprehension of non-delusion. And then perhaps we become less tricked by our delusions. We see them and we say, oh, I see you. Okay, hi, but you know, I'm not going on your ride today. I have a better game. I have a better option here. I wanted to mention that one of my delusions that was huge when I was younger, it's probably still there a little bit, is the delusion of feeling responsible. Like being responsible for other people. And you know, and so I think I tied myself in knots trying to be responsible for others. But, you know, it's a kind of delusion to think that we're responsible and we're the ones who can do it and fix it, and that it's even healthy. If they're babies and their diapers need changing, then you're responsible. But, you know, as people become adults, And I started to see it clearly in myself because of this practice that we do, because I started seeing how much it stung. I started seeing how much suffering I had around it. So clear comprehension of non-delusion that arises as we learn to be stiller, quieter, calmer within. Where we begin appreciating the value of absence rather than pursuing something. We begin allowing things to shed, to fall away, so that we can have an experience of a radical simplicity of mind that doesn't need to think about things, doesn't need to fix anything, doesn't need to defend anything or prove anything or explain anything, remember anything, plan anything, It's a kind of a trust. Learning slowly, step by step, to trust it's okay not to do all those things. At least while we're meditating. We can start there. To trust that we can just allow ourselves to not actively be involved in all these activities that the mind does. So the activities of the mind gets quieter and stiller. Still enough so we can see clearly and have clear comprehension. So, as I said in the beginning of the retreat, that the words clear comprehension, sampajana in Pali, it often is treated as a compound together with sati, mindfulness. So it's like one compound word, mindfulness, clear comprehension. You have to say it really quickly so that you can run them together. And but the sati part, the mindfulness part, is a little bit like starting to practice non-delusion from the very beginning. Mindfulness is to clearly recognize our experience independent of our biases, our preferences, our judgments, our reactivity, our stories. It's a movement towards itself to a simple way of seeing an experience. And what's happening as we develop this practice, that what's right there is a seed or a kernel, the beginning, first moments of learning mindfulness. It isn't that we're moving into something radically new, as it is we're maturing that, developing that, expanding that, filling that out. So that simplicity of attention that doesn't add on top of the experience, lets each experience be very simple, just what it is, just aware of this, matures into a clear comprehension of non-delusion. Clear comprehension of non-clinging. Clear comprehension of non-grasping to self. Clear comprehension of what the word opening means and where the opening is. Maybe it turns out there's a boundless opening always right here. And if you stop looking for things, you might appreciate how vast the opening is that you can step into. If what you want to do is to be free of delusion. So clear comprehension is a beautiful quality of the mind when it's simple. And may you, in this evening and tomorrow, maybe see if you can have a feeling for, a sense for, A radical simplicity. How there is a kind of radical absence that's not an attainment. But if it's anything, it's a shedding, it's a simplifying. And maybe to trust this place of this simplicity, where you don't have to do so much work, work so hard or try so much. A simplicity of being awake. May you trust enough that you can put to rest all that's driven by anxiety. May you experience the rest of simplicity. Thank you.